Professors FM.
Analytics Podcast, Mike Lewis and Doug Battle, brought to you by the Emory Marketing Analytics Center. Doug, men's college basketball got zero media attention throughout the entire season and then proceeded to set records in terms of the number of brackets filled out, very strong ratings in terms of TV viewership. Man, a lost opportunity, I think, for ESPN and the other networks to essentially ignore the men's game, not develop any of the narratives, but March Madness, those tournament brackets get filled out, and the fans are hyped and they're there and they're totally into it.
Yeah, college basketball season starts in March for a lot of fans, the non-super fans, the casual fans, and I'd put myself in that category. And so I kind of show up.
That's a recent development, right? I mean, you didn't used to be a casual.
No, and I used to, like, growing up, I followed UNC. I watched every time they were on TV, and I had a Tyler Hansbrough jersey. What now would be considered a super fan back then was just kind of your average.
Regular fan.
Yeah, your regular basketball fan. So it has changed, but now it's like we show up in March, open the ESPN app, read on each team when you're filling out the bracket, read the little blurb, and then make your picks based on what team has the guard who can drop 40 on any given night or who can light it up from three.
Oh. That's Jaren Shannon for the Fighting Illini, Doug.
Yeah, that's a name we haven't heard really all season as far as the American public, and now, you know, catching some buzz.
The legal system has known the name.
I'm just amazed, like, watching UConn, like, their team is phenomenal. I was really blown away. After watching them, I was kind of surprised. Why hasn't this team gotten the coverage that Caitlin Clark has gotten during the season, or, you know, that the NFL offseason has gotten during the college basketball season?
Because the best college basketball player at UConn is Paige Bueckers.
Right.
Right. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, if you follow just social media, that would probably be your conclusion.
And traditional media.
Yeah, just media in general.
Tournament's a lot of fun, though, Doug. I mean, there's a little bit of weirdness for me. So Illinois is in my team, fanboy for a second. Illinois is in the Sweet 16. I think that's the first time in 20 years since the team with D. Brown and Darren Williams went to the finals. This should be a huge deal. But basically, you know, look, I'm enjoying the team now, but it's just different, right? A bunch of transfers, a bunch of guys coming in. I'll tell you what, Doug, I miss college basketball at this point. It's like, I kind of feel like, where's this been for the last couple of months? This is a great game. This is a great thing.
Yeah. It's also kind of fun because, unlike the NBA, there's a level of chaos. It's like watching.
Oh yeah, there's chaos.
it's like watching Little League baseball versus watching the MLB. Like, sometimes it's more fun to see who's going to run the bases the wrong way in a crucial moment. And in college basketball, you know, every game just about comes down to free throws at the end, and it's just like you could be up by 6-7 points with a minute left and find yourself behind at the end of the game. Of course, the most famous example of that was, I believe, Kansas versus Memphis way back when, I think 2007-2008, the national championship game where Kansas had a miracle comeback. But the games are just never over. I watched Samford, so Birmingham guy over here, I watched Samford come back from 22 down in the second half to Kansas. Samford to Kansas. And that game came down to what many people think was a blown call. I was infuriated, Mike. I haven't been that upset, I don't think, since the Tyler Simmons was offsides national championship game against Alabama my senior year, 2018, a national championship game in football. I haven't watched a Samford game all year. I haven't been to a Samford game since I was 6 years old. I watched one game over the course of three quarters. I fell in love with the team. I knew all the play. I had my favorite players. I had, you know, you got to get number two the ball. You got to get it to two. They had this, you know, this bald point guard who looked like he was 5'8". And who could draw as many charges in a game as you can imagine, get some sneaky steals, was a pesky defender. Like, these teams, Grand Canyon last night, you know, they got a kid that looks NBA ready where was this kid all year? Why weren't we hearing about him? So it's like we just show up in March and we find out, oh, it turns out there was a product here all along. Just nobody was really marketing it. Nobody was giving it any limelight. And so the public, you know, you fall in love with the team and then you watch their season. And in my family in Birmingham, they were like, man, if we had known about the Sanford team being so good, we would have gone to a bunch of games.
Well, we had a regular season MVP. It was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Who didn't make the tournament. I'm still salty about it. We were robbed of that. We were robbed of the Sanford upset. Bucky Ball.
You know what? Right. But were we robbed? Because there was a future insurance salesman who played, you know, 4 years at Division II basketball, Peak Four, and took eight 2-point shots this year. And sent Coach Calipari home early. I mean, he was everything. Look, and I was joking with you, texting back and forth, that you conjured this guy up. He was just missing
the mustache. Just
missing the mustache and maybe a pair of goggles. That's America's sweetheart, Doug.
You take the mustache out of the equation, but you add, this guy looks like he's at least 35. He's in
6 years. 6 year player, right?
Yeah, he looks 35. He's got like a kind of widow's peak hairstyle. I was thinking about it while I was watching Oakland, because it's like, I saw a tweet that said, there's kind of this meme on Twitter. It says the European mind couldn't even comprehend blah, blah, blah. And so if in this case, you know, men's college basketball or Oakland's run and the college basketball NCAA March Madness. And, you know, I was sitting there thinking, like, how would you explain this? Because I have a lot of friends that haven't kept up with it, that don't watch, haven't seen any of these games. It's like it never happened. So if I'm at the water cooler, right, or I'm at the bar or whatever it might be, and I'm trying to tell them about what's going on, how do you even explain it with March? Like this Oakland team, you say, so there's this team from Oakland, but not Oakland. This is like Oakland,
Michigan,
Minnesota.
Michigan.
Yeah, I don't even know, somewhere up there. And they've got this one guy who looks like he's going to be a regional manager for Enterprise in about 2 years. And Kentucky, who's historically one of the greatest basketball programs in history, has no answer for the guy. They've got all these NBA prospects, McDonald's All-Americans, can't stop the guy. And then the second best player for Oakland is this guy whose dad is a photographer, and he's sitting there with all the photographers taking pictures during the game. And the coach has been there for like 40 years and never won anything. And it's so strange. There's always, like, we had that year where the team had the Catholic lady.
Sister Jean.
Yeah. She was like in a wheelchair, like praying for them to win games, and they went on a tear.
Right, but that's a great moment, right, man? You remember how angry I got at Sister Jean? I mean, the irrationality of all this, that I'm actually really mad at Sister Jean and the Ramblers.
Yeah, so it's like, there's just, it's so strange. Oh, another one this year. You've got Yale going on a run, and they're band seems to be there, but as a matter of fact, their band isn't there. Their band couldn't make the trip, so they hired a mercenary band. Do you know what school it was?
Idaho.
Idaho's band shows up, and they've got their iPads, and they're learning as they go, playing Yale songs at a Yale.
How do you get like 50 Yale t-shirts that quickly, though? I mean, do you think they're custom printed by a t-shirt shop like down the road or
like
something?
Like in Idaho or in Spokane. Was that game in Spokane? Spokane. Grand Canyon, Jerry Colangelo, who was like the head of operations for USA Basketball, is somehow affiliated with this Christian university in Arizona that's mostly known as an online university. But as it turns out, has like the craziest student section ever. And dude flew the entire student body to the games, and they were ruckus. It was like a home environment. That was one thing I think that's missing in March Madness, is like, it's college basketball, but you largely are missing the college elements in terms of the student body in the stadiums.
We can talk about the women's tournament and we will in a little bit here.
Yeah.
Not in an entirely positive way, you know, just, and again, I feel bad about saying that.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize until this year that the women's tournament, the first couple of games are conducted on the favorite's home court. Right. So you tune in and Iowa's playing in Iowa and USC's playing at USC and South Carolina's at South Carolina. That struck me as really wrong. I mean, I understand why they do it to pack out the buildings. But look, we're talking about some great moments. You know, Yale winning, the future enterprise car rental district manager, you know, hitting a bunch of threes and going to the second round. I don't think there's any. I asked you as we were, you know, warming up the mics, are there any Cinderellas on the woman's side? I don't think so. It
would be hard for there to be with that home court advantage.
When you're playing home court advantage, and I think it was South Carolina, right, the prohibitive favorite playing Presbyterian.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine Samford even giving Kansas a run if that game is at Kansas. I mean, you go down the list of some of these.
Not right.
But my counter to that, I mean, a little bit of a counter, is that some of these games, like, for example, Auburn, I'm from Alabama, Auburn, UAB, and Samford were all playing in Spokane. So there were, you know, a handful of fans that flew out there. But in my experience, I've been to a couple NCAA tournament games, and it's largely just locals who aren't fans of any of the teams who are just there to just...
The pictures of the crowd at the Villanova NIT game?
Oh gosh, no.
I mean, some of this does. I mean, it's like some of these football bowl games, right? Where, you know, you're playing somewhere in Texas and neither team has a local connection. And
yeah.
Some of these games look really bad.
I mean, I've been to NCAA tournament games where the only fans of the teams that are there are the parents of the players and they're right behind the bench. And otherwise, you've got a stadium that's half full with just random locals who are just there because there's something going on, and which is cool and stuff for them. But I think you're missing some of that, like, fandom. A lot of the commercials have been centered around fandom, and there's one that shows, you know, different ways that they're distracting free throw shooters. You largely miss out on that in the NCAA tournament. And so I think the Grand Canyon flying their students out was brilliant. I think it did give them an advantage, but also from an entertainment standpoint, it was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, people were losing their minds games that they played.
But, Doug, isn't that kind of the point of, like, the lack of relative coverage and media hype throughout the year? Like, I didn't tune in to see, and look, this is my fault, right? But it wasn't a major story of, you know, here's the Cameron crazies, right? I didn't see any of that. I didn't see, you know, Illinois fans have been known for doing things like taking a bunch of buses and going out to Iowa in particular, and then suddenly the Orange Crush is in Iowa,
right,
you know, making a spectacle of themselves.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of that, but it was, I mean, there is something interesting about sports in terms of we consume what's pushed on us and what's put in our face. But
you know what's interesting to me, and you've talked all season about women's basketball, and I know we're getting to that. All year, that's kind of been front and center. It's been the top headline in college basketball. And then we were about halfway through the first round of men's games. I'm watching with my family, and somebody goes, "What happened to Caitlin Clark? Is their season done? Are they still playing?" And I'm like, "Yeah, they're in the tournament. Like, they're, you know, they're, that's going on too.
She's on every other ad, right?"
Yeah. Well, yeah. You see her, you know, State Farm. I don't know. Gatorade, Powerade, whatever. Shoes. But yeah, she, you know, it's like come March, the media decides, oh yeah, men's college basketball, that's the headline now. Like, that's what everyone's going to buy into. And of course, everyone has their brackets, and it's kind of a little bit of that fantasy football effect where you have people who aren't really engaged with any of the teams who become engaged with the sport.
Let's throw out a couple numbers on the brackets. I mentioned, okay, so ESPN reports, I think 22.6 million brackets on the men's side. It's a good solid number.
Yeah.
And you can do brackets with CBS Sports, probably with Yahoo. I mean, so you can do brackets in multiple places. You can probably do it with FanDuel and DraftKings, et cetera. So I don't know. Maybe there's 50 million people doing men's brackets. Doesn't, you know, it's not the Super Bowl, but It's pretty impressive, it's pretty
good.
Right?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
The corresponding number for the women's game, where, you know, the, again, this massive amount of hype this year. And again, it's always this fundamental question that you can never answer. Does the women's game not do as well as the men's game because they have been historically have not been covered, or because there's inherently less interest, right? It's like, I don't even want to deal with that debate because I get it in the classroom from students all the time.
Right.
It's sort of painful. Both things can be true.
Yeah.
3.25 million brackets filled out on the women's side, Doug.
Honestly impressed that there's...
Have you ever met anyone that's filled one out?
I haven't, unless you filled one out, then I've met
someone. Haven't filled one out.
Okay. Because you've been pretty locked in this year. You've been pretty engaged with the women's game.
An academic, though, right? I've never seen Caitlin Clark play a game live.
You never watched her, yeah.
I've never watched her, but I mean, I know everything about, you know, I know when she broke the record or when she ran into that girl at Ohio State.
By the way, we've talked over the weeks about at some point Caitlin Clark isn't going to be the good guy to everybody. She's kind of been universally loved. It seems like there's starting to be a change in the narrative for some folks about, you know, she's getting away with things that other players don't. She's getting calls that other players, she's getting star treatment, and
she's talking a little bit more.
She's complaining more. She's starting to, I've talked about it, like every star of that caliber has like haters, and she hasn't had them yet, but I think it's coming. I think it's started.
Now, are you a wrestling guy at all?
Not really.
It's like the heel turn.
Yeah, I know the phrase, and that's exactly the term that came to mind.
Okay, you sent me this video. Caitlin Clark's father yelling at her to essentially, was it shut up, was what he mouthed?
Yeah, she's complaining. She's complaining to the refs. Or that's what it seems what's happening. And the father's looking at her like, shut up. Which is exactly what my father would do.
Right. Well, in parallel, there's all these sort of hype reels and sizzle reels with they're doing some Caitlin Clark. It might be like a 30 for 30 kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're developing programming around her, and they've got all this footage of the parents, and both parents talking about how competitive she was. She got thrown out of gym class for being too competitive.
She beat a little boy that was a bully in basketball or fought him. But then for the dad,
100%. It was such a great thing to see because, like, as someone that's been around youth sports, you never see the parent telling the child to shut up, even when the child should be shutting up.
I respect it. I like that. I think it's hilarious that they caught that on camera.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I love seeing the parents throughout March. Like even that Golke kid, they always flash over to his mom and dad, and they're sitting there like
showing his kids, Doug. I mean, the kid's like 26.
Yeah, yeah. And the parents are, you know, biting their teeth. And Alabama's got this player, and when he shoots free throws, every time they show his mom on a split screen, and she does the whole free throw motion with him while he's shooting to kind of will it to go in, I guess. And again, that other kid for Oakland, whose dad was a photographer and his mom was in the crowd. Elsewhere, it's like I think that there is some magic in college sports that helps you to realize that these are kids when you're flashing to the parents and showing how nervous they are, and it's something that you don't really get in professional sports as much.
It's still the best tournament in sports, even when they don't cover it during the regular season.
Yeah, it'd be great if we knew anything about any of these teams going into it, as far as saying we as in like the American people. But it's still a lot of fun.
I was watching ESPN this morning, and they were all on the UConn bandwagon talking about how I think they were throwing around that they could be competitive in the NBA. You know, probably.
Yeah.
But the reality is they're not even the number one seed and favorite. They're the defending champions.
Yeah.
They should be a major story.
Like, how do we not know about last year's championship team? You know, there's only a handful of players. I think Zach Edey at Purdue. Yeah. Baycott, you know, I think it's funny that Baycott's in that one ad from UNC because he's just played a lot of college basketball. He's been in college for like 5 years and played at the same school. So kind of by default, he's someone that you can build around in terms of marketing.
It's almost like the guys we know are almost more of the novelty cases, right? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Filipowski because Golkey, of the flop.
The guy that shoots 8 2-pointers in a season. Yeah.
I don't know. It's like,
but you got a little Buffalo Wild Wings deal. We'd love to see that.
I think they got a deal with some sort of slippers too. I saw on must have transpired overnight, some sort of slippers that they were all wearing around on social media posts.
Yeah.
You ever see Fight Club?
Yeah.
There's the line in there about single serving friends.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what we got with men's college basketball now. Single serving fandom.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We move in for 2-3 weeks and we're hyped up. Though, I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see where it goes from now. Cause look, I mean, we can say this is the best tournament. The first weekend is the best thing in sports.
So that's something I was going to touch on. I typically lose interest after the first weekend and definitely after the second, because frankly, mm-hmm. watching, you know, as good as the teams might be, watching UConn and Houston or Houston and Purdue really is just not that interesting to me as someone that's pretty far removed from both teams, conferences, all the rest. Watching an underdog, watching a Cinderella that everyone can just unite around, and whether it was Samford, because I think America fell in love with Samford, even though they did lose that first game against Kansas in their miracle comeback. Oakland, Grand Canyon, there's all these teams that are so easy to pull for and so easy to get, you know, to feel like you're right in the middle of this great sports narrative. And once that narrative ends, it's really kind of deflating for my fandom of March Madness, where I'm like, after Grand Canyon lost to Alabama, after Samford lost to Kansas, looking at the bracket going into this next weekend and realizing at the end of the day, even though there were some first round upsets, at the end of the day, it largely is like 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds, with the rare exception of like NC State, who still is from Power 5. You know, that's an ACC team. So it doesn't have that same magic of a mid-major with 3,000 students and a nun praying for the team on the side of the court, willing them to a Final Four and potentially a national championship. Once those narratives are out of the way, I think it becomes a lot less interesting to the public. Okay. And I'll be curious to see how the numbers reflect that.
Okay. But here's what you got. Okay. So now we're going to switch over. And again, the sport doesn't get a lot of hype, sadly, to me. Now we got to go through, should Kentucky fire Calipari? I think there's something out there that he hasn't won a tournament game in 5 years.
Yeah.
Something like
that. Not good. Right? Not good for Kentucky.
He's got a lifetime contract, though. Right? Who would have thought a lifetime contract would be a problem? Is Dan Hurley the best coach in college basketball? Right? So it's like with UConn, look, the Hurleys have always been a great story, right? So there's something to work with there. I've got one of these rare years where my team is still in it. And when your team's still in it,
it's fun.
Suddenly the Sweet 16 seems a lot more important.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a blast. My family pulls for Virginia. And that year, in hindsight, is probably one of those years where most people were totally disengaged once Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett's team was knocked out and there were no more true Cinderellas. UVA was a one seed. And, you know, they played Texas Tech for a national championship. But for us, that felt like the Super Bowl. It felt like the whole world was watching, like this was the biggest story in sports. And then, like, I look back at last year's Final Four national championship. I can hardly remember the teams that were in it. I don't really remember the game. You know, I had to scratch my brain in the middle of the season to remember who even won the national championship last year. And so it's like, unless it's your team, it does kind of lose that luster. Unlike professional football, for example, where really it doesn't matter who's in the game, everyone's watching it and everyone knows what's going on and is following along.
You know what I remember from last year without doing some, you know, going back and doing some research? I remember San Diego State had some amazing fans. I don't actually remember what they were doing, but the Aztec fans, they showed up in force and they were going crazy.
We did a video. They hit a buzzer beater and they had, you know, some guys that were taking their shirts off and swinging them around and they were rowdy. That was a rowdy bunch.
Last year's tournament was just ended up being, you know, this stuff, right? And, you know, oh, I got a ring or, you know, the Aethel Reese, Caitlin Clark story, the stuff that really rolled into this year. Okay. So I don't necessarily want to, okay. So go back a couple weeks, came out with the number that Fox Sports had higher viewership for the women's games that they showed. Now there were fewer of them than the men's games they showed. The narratives really over the last season have been built of course, you know, based on the women's game. Caitlin Clark is described as the greatest college basketball player of all time, largely the college GOAT. LSU has a, well, Dawn Staley at USC has an undefeated team, prohibitive favorites. There's a freshman at USC named Juju Watkins. There's another All-American freshman at Notre Dame. The most hyped Connecticut basketball player, even though they're the defending national champions on the men's side and the favorite to win again, is Paige Bueckers, Cameron Brink at Stanford. It goes on and on the way the hype worked. Kim Mulkey at LSU. So have you seen this thing where she's complaining about there's going to be a hit piece in the Washington Post about her? You haven't seen that?
No, but I look forward to reading that.
Okay,
she's
so
one of those people that
dressed like a unicorn.
Well, you just like there's something in how she presents herself that makes her easy to not like if you're not an LSU fan, of course.
So she was referencing that Brian Kelly, right? Brian Kelly, LSU?
LSU coach, yeah.
Okay, that they did a hit piece on Brian Kelly a few years ago. And so doing a little bit of digging and seeing what the issue was. So basically, the previous hit piece on Brian Kelly was making the point that LSU had a $100 million football coach and everyone else in Baton Rouge essentially was broke, right? Which got me on the path to doing a little bit more digging, because I've always been interested in some of the economics associated with the women's game. Okay, so according to the internet, so again, you know, I don't know how great these sources are. This is kind of stunning. LSU's women's team's expenses are about $10 million.
Okay.
The revenue for that team that they produce, just under $2.5 million. Mulkey's salary, Doug, last year, $3.26 million, with a raise to coming above $4 million. And when I saw those numbers, then I'm like, okay, I'm not a hater of the woman's game, but there is something so fundamentally off and wrong with this situation when the head coach is making more than the revenue produced by the entire program.
I'd be curious to see how that compares like to a college football coach at a big program like LSU.
Oh, well, I don't think Kirby Smart is making, let's say the football team's generating $100 million in revenue. I don't think Kirby Smart's making $150 million a year.
Right. So there's something fundamentally different there. And I think that, I mean, with a lot of college sports, we all kind of know that there's certain sports that carry the revenue side of things and certain sports that kind of depend on those sports in order to function, right?
Okay, but here's been always the mystery, right? So why does Mulkey make this much money where I'm sure the volleyball coach at LSU does not make that kind of money. The gymnastics coach does not make this kind of money. So you end up in this strange situation where there's a ton of hype and there's also a ton of subsidization, right? Which ends up in a very kind of strange thing where you're hyping this sport that is the most hearing these numbers, the women's basketball teams have got to be the most subsidized teams in all of the NCAA. That's a strange situation for us to be in terms of, oh, the women's game is exploding in popularity when in fact it's just being massively subsidized. What if you put these subsidies into the softball program or the soccer program or the volleyball program? Would you get a better result out than what you're getting with the women's team? And again, I love when anything gets remotely political, which everything in sports does.
Right.
It's more a question of who gets the subsidies rather than an attack. There's no attack on women's sports here. It's just when you're dividing things up and you're trying to figure out what to hype up or what to promote, why does it go to these basketball programs? I have no idea at this point.
Yeah, it's curious to me that women's basketball has been the focal point. I mean, you look at soccer, for example, there's a pretty massive audience for the U.S. women's national team, and college women's soccer is really not on anyone's radar.
College women's softball does very well in some ways.
Yeah.
When they play their World Series.
Yeah. But like soccer, for example, you have all these soccer fans for the national teams, but you don't have any fans really for the college level. And I went to some games in college and I enjoyed going. It's always been curious to me that women's college basketball, where there's definitely a lot less of a professional or Olympic level fandom, is such an emphasis. And I know years back, like in the SEC, there was a huge emphasis on men's college basketball because they felt like they had, you know, some opportunity that hadn't been tapped into, and they wanted to double down on investing in getting people in the games, getting great coaches.
You're talking about coaches specifically?
No, not just coaches, fandom too. Like, just like all kinds of measures started being taken by, like, at Georgia, that we got free stuff every time we went to a game. And watching the SEC basketball go from one of the worst Power Five conferences to arguably in the last couple of years, it's like definitely a top three conference. I mean, it might have surpassed the ACC, which is like really would have been hard to believe a decade or two decades ago, but they made such a push. And so we're seeing that same push in women's college basketball. And I think my question is always like, is it because of, like, in the men's game in the SEC, where they see, oh, we have this untapped potential, we have this diamond in the rough? Or is it just like somebody felt, you know, is it emotional? Is it somebody felt like this needs to be more of a thing?
Why would you think, and again, I'm not, this is just a discussion, why would you think there is that diamond in the rough, right? I mean, when you look at youth sports participation, I suspect that girls basketball trails girls soccer. Guarantee you it trails girls soccer.
Yeah.
I would guess it trails girls volleyball. And I wouldn't be surprised if it also trails girls lacrosse and girls softball.
And so we've also got gymnastics in there, which is like...
Yeah. I was sticking to the team sports.
Yeah.
But look, if you want individual sports, probably trail swimming and track as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, I can think that I suspect that some of it has to do with that. If you're looking at coaches' salaries, it's very obvious when the men's basketball coach, you know, because the men's baseball coach probably doesn't make big dollars. Maybe they do at some of the programs, but in general, they're not making multi-million dollar deals. And so if you've got, you know, coaches coaching the same sport, and one is making $8 million a year and the other is making $200,000 a year, you end up, you know, it becomes a very obvious thing to have an issue with. The other thing I suspect is happening is it's just that the NBA has a hype machine. Is anyone better at being a hype machine than the NBA? Trick question. The NFL. But the NBA is second, right? So women's basketball has that built-in hype machine as the NBA is pushing all things basketball.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing it trickle into the WNBA, definitely with the media coverage. And I think as players like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and some of these stars that they're building at the college level make it the transition over to the WNBA, we're going to see a huge push for that sport. And I'm just curious, like, is it working? Like, it feels like it's working because everyone is aware of these players and these stars. Is it working in the sense of, is it drawing dollars? Are people buying tickets? And are people watching the games on television? What are the ratings look like so far for the women's tournament versus the men's?
I couldn't find it, Doug. I was actually searching. I put a good 10 minutes into this search and I couldn't find any numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see numbers as the tournament goes on. I mean, look, the question I have, you know, since people want to throw out words like equity, what does this take away from? Right? I mean, is the WNBA a competitor for the National Women's Soccer League? Is it a competitor to this new volleyball league that some folks are trying to build out this year? The Atlanta team is called the Vibe. I suspect that those sports have a real significant problem moving forward in terms of growing, because the NBA ain't going to lose this deal, right? The NBA is going to, but again, it's this kind of strange disconnect from the sports that the girls want to play to the sport that is featured most prominently on on media.
Yeah, it's strange. I would imagine, like, on the NBA side, that they look at the demographic and see, you know, primarily male audience and feel like, okay, well, we need to have something for the women too. Whereas, like, football, for example, seems to be, I mean, it's still primarily male audience, but there's a lot of women that follow. I personally feel like, and this isn't based on looking at any data, that, like, the NFL has a much larger female following relative to men than, say, the NBA. And so maybe developing a league for the women players gives, because I, you know, they showed a little girl in the crowd at one of the games yesterday wearing a Caitlin Clark jersey, and I saw a sign that said Golki shoots like Caitlin, and a little girl was holding it up. And so it's like they're creating these figures for little girls to aspire to, and then to watch their careers and watch. And so it's like, you know, maybe it's untapped in the sense of you're not taking NBA fans to the WNBA, but you're taking people who aren't watching basketball and getting them to watch basketball. And so that's I think if it's a strategy on behalf of the NBA in terms of promoting the women's league and the women's game, which seems to be part of their strategy, that's what I imagine. I think they're looking for new viewership.
A couple of things related to that, though. Number one, and I say this as a marketing professor, I'll switch over to be a marketing professor for a second. The constant comparisons to male athletes in the men's sport, I do not think serve them well. Right. All this kind of stuff about, you know, that Caitlin Clark is the greatest collegiate basketball player of all time.
Best shooter, men's or women's game.
Yeah. It's not helpful in the long term. These are kind of, they're similar things, they're related things, but they're different things. And all you're doing is opening up you're essentially pushing, looking for a reaction. And then when the reaction comes, then suddenly you're not in the realm of positivity anymore. Right. You're just not. Suddenly
it's an argument in the comment section.
It's an argument in the comment section. and you know what? For those of you in the comment sections, you really don't need to bother, because we can write a couple of bots, one that attacks the female player and then the counterpoint that attacks you for attacking, being a small man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I as you were talking, I was looking this up and look, and this is something that I've seen across the board. This fandom survey, the Next Generation fandom survey, generated some numbers related to Caitlin Clark fandom over the weekend. The people that indicate that they are fans of Caitlin Clark, it's almost 2-1 as prevalent on the male side as on the female side. And this is something that I tend to see a lot, even with Megan Rapinoe, where it gets very close, with Serena Williams. You go out and survey people and you say, are you a fan of this athlete? Even if it's a female athlete, you're going to get more men than women saying they are. And then, like in the case of Caitlin Clark, it's almost 2-1.
That is shocking. I really would have guessed the other way around.
And what I think it is, Doug, is that, look, you know who Caitlin Clark is because you exist in this world of sports, yeah. Right? You watch ESPN, you follow ESPN on social media. So you know who Caitlin Clark is. You know that she's a phenomenal shooter, right? Shooting from the logo. Her workout videos, God, we love her workout. I loved her workout videos, didn't you? I mean, they were amazing.
Yeah, Caitlin, like, respect, you know? She's like, she's... I think every guy looks at her and knows that, like, she would beat me in a 3-point shooting contest. Doesn't mean she would beat Steph Curry, or doesn't mean that she would, like, survive in the NBA or on the UConn team, men's team. But it's a different, again, you know, those comparisons aren't helpful. She's amazing.
Doesn't mean that she could have got the shots off that our future enterprise brand manager got off either, right?
He got, by the way, his shot selection is crazy.
He's always on the run,
falling away. It's insane. But yeah. So, but again, that's not helpful. I think we look at it and we recognize that she's, for the potential that she has, she's like maxed out way more than I am. And she's peak athleticism, peak performance. She's doing all the right things on and off the court. She's
a trash talker on top of it. And look, I like when she complains to the resume. I like when she complains to the referee, and I like when her dad tells her to shut up. She is perfect.
Yeah. So, like, again, I think that I don't know any guys that are really haters, which is part of what I've touched on before, but I think that guys watch it, and like my dad, you know, who's like not one to, he's from a generation that didn't follow.
I don't even know where this is going, so I'm looking forward to the next couple of words.
He's from a generation, you know, that didn't have the kind of social, where everyone feels like they have to support things. Yeah. Like you've talked about, no one owes your fandom to anything. Like my generation, there's a little bit of like, people should watch the WNBA because these women work really hard, or people should watch the women's national team and really root for them because those girls, you know, deserve the same amount of money or the same amount of attention. Like he doesn't come from that generation. He's just a sports guy. He just likes watching entertaining athletes perform at a high level. He loves Caitlin Clark. He asks every night when we're watching games, is Caitlin Clark on? Can we switch to Caitlin Clark if it's not a good game?
And I think this is different because I think your mom's actually a sports fan.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Does your dad know more about Caitlin Clark than your mom does?
Yeah, I mean, he'll like be on YouTube. Like I'll like walk in a room and he's watching like her shooting around or her high school highlights or something. He's fascinated by her. And I think that 2-to-1 ratio, I think there's a lot of guys like that are just fascinated by this girl that came out of the Midwest and it's just a total phenom, is doing the kinds of things in the girls game that Steph Curry and Damian Lillard have done. And it's really impressive. And then you find this kind of legendary stories of her childhood and how competitive she is. And she's a fascinating figure. And I think it, you know, obviously it goes beyond gender in terms of the interest because, and at the same time, it's not one of those things where it's like in music or something, when there's a lot of male fans or acting, like Sydney Sweeney's got a lot of male fans, but it's not because, you know, men are so impressed by her acting. It's because of this level of attraction or this kind of, you know, there's an appeal obviously because of being the other gender. But in Caitlin Clark's case, it's not about any of that. It's just truly everyone's impressed. Every guy I know is impressed by her and they love to watch. They're like seeing history made in sports and she's making it on a regular basis. And so she's on TV, you know, they're susceptible to tuning in and following along.
Yeah. Can you name a second player on Iowa's team?
No. No, I can't.
Okay, Doug. So while this is going on, and like I said, tournament's great. Love it. And you know what? The women's tournament is going to be a lot of fun to watch too now as we actually get sort of the cannon fodder out of the way and we get to see some of these matchups with, you know, Kim Mulkey and Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Dawn Staley, et cetera. It's going to be, look, I'm going to tune in.
With a critical
eye. But I'm going to tune in.
I expect the women's tournament to have increasing interest as the men's kind of like flakes away. And so,
right. You know what? But this is the point.
At a different scale, of course.
But this is the point, right? Let's see these massive promotion. And again, this is where the counterpoint would be. Well, they've been doing it the way you're suggesting for years. Have an equal amount of focus on Dan Hurley as Kim Mulkey and then see where the eyeballs end up, right? So at this point, this is all, you know what, Doug, when I talk about fandom and how fandom evolves, I talk about technology, I talk about demographics, and I talk about marketing. It's almost like people get upset when I talk about the marketing part of this, right? Yeah. Because people want to think fandom is this naturally occurring
organic phenomena.
But the reality is there's always someone trying to make dollars, right? Or they've got some sort of goals related to sponsor. It's all about dollars, right? So it's hard to figure out what's real and what's hyped.
There's just not a lot of organic. Every now and then you'll have something organic. It kind of felt like the Oakland kid. That was pretty organic. It's not like there was this media push for him.
But like I said, someone did a deal with them where they're advertising slippers.
Yeah,
the day after, right?
Yeah, a little less authentic of a vibe, but you see that in music too. Like everyone, Taylor Swift was kind of this supposed underdog story in music, and as it turns out, had a lot of money behind her from the very beginning, which is great. It was a great investment for her father. It was a great investment for everyone involved, and so it was a winning business strategy. But nonetheless, it's a lot of these things that appear to be organic in fandom are actually quite manufactured.
I'd say that, I mean, probably every cultural industry, including academia, frankly. Okay, Doug, The other thing, the other continuing story, which is always a big story, NFL draft. Well, just the NFL.
Yeah.
Okay. My favorite things. So number one, there's always a guy, and I'm always suspicious of the guy that suddenly goes from being a, maybe he's a second round draft pick, and then postseason starts to become the flavor of the day. JJ McCarthy, now viewed as a potential top six pick, his former coach saying he's the best quarterback workout he's ever seen, not going to slip below the Minnesota Vikings, who I think might be picking about 10th or 11th. I love it. He could be the guy in the ESPN green room, Doug, that goes either way, right? Either goes early or
he goes where we would have originally projected him. Yeah. And this is a manufactured media effort to create a storyline, right? Will Levis last year. We've seen it 100 times. I personally didn't realize McCarthy had such a huge following. When we posted a video and you had made a similar statement kind of critiquing the idea of him as this elite generational prospect at quarterback, and all of the comments on like YouTube and Instagram were, I guess, Michigan fans who were like, oh, I'm bookmarking this, you're gonna regret this, like this guy is gonna be, you know, Tom Brady, who also came out of Michigan, by the way, you know, like it was really defensive. People took it really, really personally. And so it's like, wow, he's got a real fandom for a guy that when I watched, you know, whether it was the annual Ohio State game, you know, the annual college football playoff games that Michigan was in, or whatever random, you know, Big Ten game during, you know, against Indiana when they're trying not to get upset, JJ McCarthy, it's like they didn't really ask him to do a lot. They were really kind of a run-oriented team, defensive-minded team. So it's not that he underperformed at this huge level or anything. It's just like he threw a wide open deep ball, screens. Guys on his team were always better than the guys on the other team that he was getting the ball to. Kind of a game manager type role in college, it seems. Like, well, the old Alabama model.
He was never described as that elite. Again, I'm not doing any analysis here. I'm not even looking at statistics. I'm just making an observation about the way hype works. And of the way hype seems to work with the NFL draft. Week in, week out in college football, I mean, you heard a lot about Caleb Williams, right? And you heard a lot about Drake May and Jaden Daniel. Is that the LSU player?
Yeah, won the Heisman.
And, oh, you know, Washington's on TV, and you got to check out this guy, Michael Penix. He's the NFL ready player.
Yeah.
So J.J. McCarthy was never in that. He was never described in that way, right?
No, he just was never in the conversation. He was looked at for all his years at Michigan as a game manager. You know, he took over for another game manager quarterback when he first came in. And so I think the thought was that he was a marginally better game manager. That was the perception. And then all of a sudden, yeah, come the offseason, we find out, oh, this guy he's going to be a franchise quarterback for somebody, supposedly, because he can work out really well and he's a good interview and he can toss the ball around. You know, he can roll left, throw in right across his body 60 yards like every offseason, you know, future rookie quarterback seems to do. And so the old Sam Darnold video or Zach Wilson. And
Wilson.
Yeah. And so, again, it's out of nowhere. When I, you know, you watch his video, you watch these videos people are talking about and it's like, wow, that's an impressive throw. And he did play under Harbaugh, who, as much as I like to criticize him for just being kind of a weird guy, has been a really successful coach at both the college and professional levels.
Now, of course, Harbaugh has a quarterback and is not interested in taking JJ McCarthy.
Right. But yeah, it's one of those storylines that once he's drafted, it'll be either the story that, wow, this guy jumped up the draft, or wow, this guy fell in the draft relative to where he and his team thought he might land. And now he's got reason to prove the doubters wrong, and that whole thing that Lamar Jackson had and that we see with every quarterback that's kind of the green room guy, Will Levis last year. And then we'll see. I mean, we'll see. We might find out, wow, it turns out Michigan all this time had an elite quarterback and they had him functioning as a game manager. I've seen it. I've seen that kind of thing in terms of like Virginia.
But Harbaugh was the best coach in America.
Right. Virginia basketball. Malcolm Brogdon was a like kind of the equivalent of a game manager in college, wasn't really allowed to create much. And so when he first got to the NBA his rookie season, I saw him like driving by guys and posterizing people. I was like, where did this come from? Well, he was in such a strict system in college that he wasn't allowed. His game was really better suited for professional than college. Maybe that's the case with McCarthy. I wouldn't want my team betting on it. As a Giants fan, I hope they stay away.
Yeah, it's just much more of an observation. Nothing personal to the young man, just an observation about that we see this play out just about every year. Look, the other, I think, fun NFL story actually has nothing to do with this year's draft, but Deion Sanders essentially declaring war on the NFL draft system of he's going to decide where his son and Travis Hunter are going to go. Not going to go anywhere cold. Likes going to think about places like San Francisco, Dallas, Washington? I don't know. Baltimore as possible landing spots. The hype, you know, again, and you think about what's kind of beyond anything in terms of, let's say, subverting the draft system. Deion, if you're a top high school player, Deion is going to make you NIL money, right? Because if you're great, he's going to have you out there constantly in the media and part of the media narrative.
Doing fashion shows.
Going to work for sort of like, it's almost like Deion is a producer or a promoter at this point in terms of managing these guys. And you can imagine a scenario where, you're a top quarterback playing for Deion Sanders, you're making $10 million a year. And so, yeah, I can wait. I can wait an extra year on the NFL because I've already got these massive cash flows coming in. He is, again, you know, I'm not entirely positive on what Deion did for Colorado, and I suspect that. Oh, as a side note, did you see this? That Colorado has a record number of applications.
No way.
For the freshman class. Yeah. So
ridiculous.
Yeah. But you know, so Deion, I suspect the story ends bad for Colorado eventually. And I'm not saying he's, you know, particularly insightful in terms of what he's doing, but he is perfectly adapting to the system and is, again, going to be sort of a pressure point in terms of breaking all these systems eventually.
He's like a PR leader at the college coaching level because he created the perception early in the season last year that Colorado was a playoff contender coming off practically a winless season. And I know people who were following their games and were like, oh, I'm a Colorado guy now. I like what he's doing. I like the way he's teaching those kids a lesson and this and that. And then the team had a terrible season. And yet the perception is still that it was a pretty remarkable turnaround, that it was like, hey, it was year one. It was incredible what they did.
How many games did they win? Do you remember?
I don't know. I mean, it couldn't have been more than five. So it wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot. But now we're talking, we go from like a 5-win season to talking about my kid
thinking that he's got the two top picks in the NFL draft next year.
And, well, we go from a 5-win season to talking about next year, we're going to be selective about where we let our kids go in the NFL. And it's like, hold your horses now. it does remind me of LeBron, you know, when his kid was like in middle school talking about his future NBA career. And it's like, well, you got to see how he's going to pan out. I'm not saying Sanders won't as a quarterback, but I also know that like, he got passed on by Georgia. He got, you know, that team isn't one of the top teams. He's not, I just don't think he's well positioned to be, unless he has like a crazy touchdown interception ratio. You know, I think it's gonna be hard for him. Obviously, that it's a different story with that corner slash wide receiver.
You want to hear something amusing?
Travis Hunter. Yeah, go for it.
So in 2023, Colorado was 4-8. And they were 1-8 in the Pac-12. In 2022, they were 1-11. They were also 1-8 in the Pac-12. In 2022, they tied for 11th. In 2023, they were 12th.
Remarkable turnaround. This is just the start. if things keep trending in this direction, this is going to be a national title contender. And if, you know, we're going to pick and choose where our players go in the pros, Colorado football.
Okay. Steelers may have a little bit of a quarterback controversy. Justin Fields, the gift that keeps on giving. My favorite storyline going into this year. Last thing. Well, Doug, I don't know. You know, there's also, okay, last thing. We will ignore popular culture. I will tell you this, though. Do you have Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Okay, you need to go watch this new Roadhouse movie.
Jake Gyllenhaal got shredded.
It is a complete tribute. It's the perfect follow-up to the original. It's chaotic. It's terrible. It's poorly acted. Conor McGregor is cast perfectly, and it's awful. It is the original Roadhouse was a spectacular movie in terms of rewatchability. Doesn't really make much sense. And this reboot, amazing. Amazing. My best movie I've seen.
I think like year. On my watch list, this is right behind Madam Web of like movies that I've just got to watch based on the ridiculous things I've heard.
The thing about Roadhouse is it's terrible, but it's so much fun. And this completely follows along those lines. I guess maybe the truly last thing, you got any opinions about Shohei Ohtani and a potential gambling scandal in Major League Baseball?
I like the presumed story that they're throwing his interpreter under the bus for Ohtani's gambling problem because the MLB has a rule that any player that gambles has to miss a year or something of that nature. And so they're trying to get around their own rules to protect their best player, their only star, it feels like, on a national level or international level. Yeah. And so it's kind of hilarious to me. It's one of those things where I'm like, I don't really know what's true, but it seems like where there's smoke, there's fire. And I'll be curious to see how it plays out. I've enjoyed all the memes about Ohtani and Bruno Mars meeting up at casinos in Las Vegas. And, you know, I think that Ohtani is already such a big story going into this year's Major League Baseball season where he's finally on a competitive team. And I saw one tweet saying his punishment, rather than like going to prison or something, might be to just be sent back to the Angels.
Well done, tweet. Okay. We'll wrap it there. You know, if you're interested in some of the research I alluded to, the fandom research on Caitlin Clark, also fully published all the results related to the data that suggests Trump's VP pick should be Tucker Carlson. All that is available at fandomanalytics.com.